This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. The Warrior Games kicked off this week in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hundreds of athletes are competing in team sports like volleyball and basketball, or in individual competitions like track and field and archery. Each athlete is an active member of the military or a veteran, and each one is ill or has been wounded. First Lady Michelle Obama attended the opening ceremonies of the Warrior Games, saying the athletes' strength and determination leave people in awe. One of the many competitors is La Crosse native, retired Army Staff Sergeant Shonda Gaith. I spoke with her earlier this week to find out how the Olympic-sponsored event has been going. Up until now, Gaith has been preparing for her Warrior Games events and competes tomorrow and Saturday.
We've actually been here a week on train-up, but the Warrior Games, the opening ceremony with First Lady Obama was yesterday, and our first competitions were today, and they've gone really good. I'm still in training this week. My competitions aren't until Friday and Saturday.
And you're competing in track and field and swimming?
In swimming, correct.
So what events are you doing in those?
In track, I'm doing the wheelchair racing bike, and I'll be doing the 100, 200, 400, and the 1500 race, and I will also be doing the shot put for field event. And then on Saturday for swimming, I will be doing the 50 and 100 free and the 50 back, along with a relay race with three other my teammates.
As a former track athlete, that's incredibly impressive that you can excel at the short distance and long distance. So,
I'm doing my best. I'm new to being an athlete.
How has the training been going up to this point, and do you have goals set for yourself through the events this year?
I'm really confident that I'll pull three golds out of the pool.
Nice.
I will do my best and put 100% into the wheelchair race. I'm the only female that was entered out of all, both the British force and American forces. So I will be racing against the men. And so that makes the playing field a little bit different.
In what event will you be racing against the men in?
All of my wheelchair races will be against the men. I'll be racing against the Marines, Air Force, Navy, Coast Guard, and the British. Yeah. Just do my level best to put some good times down. Finishing is no question. I know I can finish it. I just want to put some good time in.
So why did you decide that you wanted to enter the Warrior Games this year?
This is my first year competing. I actually, last year in June, went to the VA Wheelchair Games for the first time, and they had put me in swimming and track and field, and I had never even practiced or thought about doing any sporting events since I've gotten sick. And they said I was kind of really good at it. They were impressed with my times. They got me an Olympic coach, and we started training, and I kept dropping time and dropping time, and they were like, okay, if you're going to keep training, let's get you into the Warrior Games. I went to two camps, qualification camps, and where they were weeding out, we could only bring 50 Army to the games. So the competition was really tough. There's only 14 of us here for swimming. And I made it through all the cuts. And so all that training paid off. And I just found out I made the B team for the Paralympics. And that's where my goal is going, to be able to... There's three levels of Paralympics. It goes B team, A team, and then the actual Paralympics. And I'd like to get good enough to compete on a Paralympic level.
Congratulations on that accomplishment. That's incredible.
Thank you.
So I want to kind of go back a little bit. You grew up in La Crosse.
Yes. Actually, I started on French Island and then moved on the north side over there by Logan, where my mom still lives.
And while you were in high school, when you were at Logan High School, that's when you enlisted in the Wisconsin Guard, is that correct?
Yes, I was 17, a sophomore in high school. I enlisted in the split training where I did high school during the winter months, and during the summer between my sophomore and junior year, I went to basic, Then I just did drills during the winter months, and during my junior and senior year, I did my AIT, which was for transportation, and then I came back for my senior year, but I had enough credits to graduate in December.
So why did you decide to enlist in the Wisconsin Guard, and especially to balance high school and a military life?
I think I always knew I'd be in the military. It's kind of a family, I wouldn't say requirement, but it's part of our history. My brother, my sister, my dad, my uncles, my grandfathers have all been in the military, my cousins. So it was just a natural thing to do, was to join Army.
And you've had a very long military career since when you first enlisted in the Wisconsin Guard. Can you talk about that?
Sure. Totally, I did 24 years, 10 months. I did the Wisconsin National Guard in Onalaska, and then I transferred to an active reserve unit on Fort McCoy, which I deployed to Desert Storm. And then I went active duty. I completed my active duty tour at Fort Hood, Texas.
And when did you complete your active duty?
December 15th of 2006.
Was it during your military career that you received your traumatic brain injury that put you in a wheelchair?
Yes.
Do you mind talking about that incident?
Yeah. It was just a bunch of unfortunate coincidences that I had a lot of things. They said I probably had traumatic brain injury from all my deployments, and then the last one would just was the last straw, and I ended up with a pituitary brain tumor, and I had cancer, and it was just more than my body could take. And so with a lot of rehab and a lot of help through the VA and the Army hospitals, they've been working very hard on make me as healthy as I can be. And this training this year has improved my health a lot and my outlook, and giving me the motivation to push harder and do things that I never thought I could do. A couple weeks ago, I went to Aspen with the Winter Games, and I learned to downhill ski on a slalom, where they put you on a slalom wheelchair skier, and you go downhill. And I went cross-country skiing that way, and we learned how to rock climb. And those are all things you don't think that you can do once you're in a wheelchair.
And now you proved yourself wrong.
Yes. It's a little scary, but I'm out for new adventures. My next thing is to do what's called the Summer Games, and I'll be going to San Diego, and we are going to learn how to surf and sail in San Diego.
So it sounds like the Warrior Games and your experience with your trainers leading up to this point have really given you a new outlook on life. Can you talk about that more? And maybe when you talk with other athletes at the Warrior Games, what this means for veterans and soldiers who have been injured in combat?
Well, the Warrior Games just give you so much inspiration to see soldiers out here that are double and triple amputees, and they are just kicking it in their individual sports and their team sports, and everybody is motivated. I mean, you can't help but be motivated from your fellow teammates. And other people that see us, they're just like, wow, if you can do that, how do I get involved? And so the Warrior Games is inspirational to newly injured and ill soldiers that think that their world just came to an end because of an injury. And we're out here to show them that there isn't "I can't" in our vocabulary.
Do you see the Warrior Games getting bigger and bigger every year, just trying to get more soldiers and veterans involved in the games?
Yes. The Warrior Games is expanding, and as more and more, if the media gets it out and everybody sees what we do and how hard we work in our individual sports, and that we have people here that are challenging, military and Olympic times on their events. So it's just really inspiring.
So what's the feeling in Colorado Springs right now? Is there, I mean, does everyone root each other on?
Everybody is supercharged. I mean, we have the little rivalry between, you know, today we came out and we are tied on medals with the Marines. And the Marines have taken the last 2 years on the Commander's Cup, so the Army's really after the Marines. But, you know, it's all in good fun. And we play the Marines tonight in Cited Volleyball, and it will just be very loud, and everybody will be charged up to support our team to victory tonight in volleyball. And our whole team shows up and to support each other in their events. When you're competing, you know that the other 50 teammates or how many that aren't in your event are right there in the sideline cheering you on.
The fact that you are able to watch all the other events too, it probably kind of helps relax you and also keeps you charged up for the entire week as well.
Right. During this week, we have really light training. We will, I'm very excited tomorrow. We have swimming actually in the Olympic swimming pool over at the Olympic Center. And we'll get some advice tomorrow from some of the Olympic swimmers. And so that will be an incredible experience. And when that is done, we will come over and support the Army on wheelchair basketball.
I know the games are still going on and you're still training, but what's so far do you see as your biggest takeaway from the Warrior Games?
Back being part of the Army family. When you're in the Army, you know you belong to the Army family. And once you retire, you have that separation. And Warrior Games includes active duty, National Guard, reservists, and veterans, and it brings you back to the family fold, and you have that connection that, like me, I spent almost 25 years, so it's a very large part of my life. So it's a way to reconnect with other soldiers, and, you know, everybody is very helpful and supportive and making sure, you know, they give you encouragement and guidance and go, hey, we were here last year. This is what you should be able to expect, the noise level, how to compete. They just give you advice, and they're here to support you.
Staff Sergeant Chandra Gaith, is there anything else you'd like to talk about?
I wish my family was here, but I'll be glad that they'll be able to hear this at home. And hopefully next year I make the team again so they can come. All the family members were sponsored by a company to come. We were allowed to bring our family members, which is such a morale boost, you know, for the athletes to be able to bring two family members here from anywhere. They got flown in and put up in a hotel to be able to be here all week long with us is really great for morale, and it's nice to, you know, see a familiar face and go, you know, show them what we've been working so hard at.
So who of your family got to come?
My sister got to come from Atlanta.
Oh, nice.
Thank you so much for interviewing me.
Yeah, thank you so much. And we wish you the best of luck. Everyone in lacrosse will be rooting for you.
Thank you so much.
Retired Army Staff Sergeant Chandra Gaith is a lacrosse native who's competing in this year's Warrior Games. It's a competition for wounded soldiers and veterans. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. La Crosse Police Chief Ed Kondracki celebrated his last day on the job a week ago. Kondracki served as police chief for 19 years. We'll revisit part of an interview I did with him recently as he reflects on his career.
If I were to describe my last almost 20 years with La Crosse, you know, I would say that it's been very rewarding.
And why is that?
Well, you know, La Crosse is a very nice community. People here are easy to work with. I am a strong advocate for community policing. And one of the greatest challenges in community policing, of course, is engaging the community. And what I found was that people here in La Crosse were very easy to engage, and that they were eager to interact with their police. during the course of the last 20 years, I think I've served on just about every community-based organization's board, including the YMCA, the Red Cross, the Boys and Girls Club. I even had the good fortune to chair the United Way campaign for the entire Cooley region. And as such, I had an opportunity to meet with and interact with all those organizations that are under the umbrella of United Way. And what a nice opportunity to meet some really, really fantastic people. To me, what's made policing a lifetime endeavor has been working with the community. You know, we've gone through a transition. I've actually been in policing for 47 years, and my father was a police officer in Milwaukee for 33 years. In fact, he was a police officer when I was born, so I basically, literally grew up in a police family, and I've thought about policing my entire life, and I consider it fortunate for me to have come into policing during a change in the entire way that we police in America. Policing in America has changed to a community policing era, if you will. About the time I came into policing, we were in the end of or towards the tail of what was referred to as the reform era. Back in the day, if you will, the emphasis was on technology. Police response times, how long does it take you to get from point A to point B? If someone calls the police, did it take 3 minutes or did it take 3.5 minutes? You know, what's your average response time? And during the course of the last 20, 30, maybe even 40 years, we've come to ask not how long did it take you to get there, but what did you do once you arrived? You know, and to me, that is a it's actually a revolution in police thinking, if you will. It's a matter of going from call takers and report writers to community problem solvers. And to me, that's what makes policing challenging. It's what makes it rewarding. And I think anybody considering a career in law enforcement is going to find that this is a wonderful time to be in policing and a real opportunity to work with people and to make a difference.
Since you installed that mindset of the community policing, can you talk about the changes you saw within your department, but then also within the community?
You know, what's happened, I think, is the educational level of the La Crosse Police Department has increased 400% in just the little over 19 years that I've been here. We now have several people with graduate degrees. We've got a lot of people with bachelor's degrees. We've got a good number working on graduate degrees. So in general, this educational level has increased dramatically. And what I think is at the same time, the expectation of police officers coming into our agency has increased dramatically as well. These folks have gone to school. The majority of them have degrees in criminal justice, but others have degrees. We have got people with degrees in marketing and in business and so on. And these people have expectations, and they expect to put this education to use. So our challenge is to meet their needs by facilitating an opportunity to actually engage the community, do some meaningful problem solving. In other words, let's not go around putting a Band-Aid on problems, but let's address the underlying causes of problems in the community. And actually, the opportunities are unlimited. And what I've seen is our officers, as far as a change is concerned, they've come to recognize that they're not just call and report takers, but rather expected to do something about the issues that they deal with. At the same time, I think the community has engaged the police in a more meaningful way. Take as an example the Community Health Consortium. The police department plays an integral role in that effort, and that's an effort to deal with binge drinking and underage drinking. At the same time, we've engaged other community groups. Take the warming center as an example. How do you deal with homeless in your community? Take Oktoberfest. We've gone from 200 arrests on a weekend to 20, and that's because the officer sat down and said, what was resulting in all these arrests? What were the circumstances leading up to and following the event that resulted in 200 arrests, and what can we do to improve the public's perception of the way the police handle the situation, and what can we do to reduce confrontation? And I think the officers themselves have come up with some meaningful responses to all that. So my concern in the very beginning of my career was that the police were so often left out of the equation. You'd hear about, well, the community is rallying around the homeless situation. And when you'd see who was being asked to come up with solutions, it was everybody except the police. And I began to wonder, are the police perceived as the solution, or are they perceived as part of the problem? And it's gratifying to see, as time goes on, that the police are more and more involved. Even take school-based initiatives. Take school resource officers as an example, or take the DARE officers, or officers who are involved in the GREAT program, Gang Resistance Education and Training. We've got officers in the schools. And when I go to a DARE graduation today, I'll have 80 DARE graduates in the audience and their families. My question to them is, how many of you have a friend who's a police officer? And Maureen, I can tell you it's very gratifying, and I always keep my fingers crossed, but I can tell you that all 80 of the DARE graduates will raise their hand and say they have a friend who's a police officer. And you know what? 20 or 30 years ago, I'm sorry to say, the only police officer most people knew was the one they met through the driver's window of their squad car. Of their personal car. It's the officer who was in the squad car. But, you know, we need to interact with the community, young people and old alike, in a non-confrontational way. And let's bring some problem-solving skills to the table and interact with people that way. I think it makes a more meaningful job for the officer. Or you can go home at the end of the night thinking that you really are making a difference. And I think it makes a difference to the community as well, that they understand that someone's listening to their concerns. You know, we are among the few agencies that still make house calls 24/7. So we see the blighted conditions. We see squalor. You know, we see social unrest and disorder. And we see people, you know, sometimes at their very worst. And, you know, recognizing that, I think we ought to ask our officers, what do you think we can do about this situation?
So beyond community policing and increased police education, what are some of your other accomplishments in your 19 years on the La Crosse Force?
Well, you know, frankly, Maureen, I don't know what accomplishments I may have had. I think the most gratifying part of policing is in being a police chief is being able to facilitate others in making a real difference. And, you know, we have seen a significant difference in what our police department's able to do today.
La Crosse Police Chief Ed Kondracki, reflecting on his 19 years as head of the police department. His last day was Friday. Assistant Chief Rob Abraham takes over as interim chief until a replacement is found later this year. 18 people have applied for the position. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, what the recent weather could mean for plants and trees. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.